Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know them from the Greg Hill Morning Show.
Ken and others
are acting like straight bitches.
I'm not sure who Ken is. Curtis, your one-liners suck.
Or the morning show before that.
Next, you hear from Jerry, who says, but
we have many arrangements for that, Lumpy.
And you definitely hate one of them.
That is Ken Laird.
At least.
Yeah.
It's the Ken and Curtis Show.
Ken and Curtis aren't adults.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Good weekend.
Hearing that Dino cut, can I give a little Dino homage with a thematic question to start
the
program?
I'm going to start drinking.
Other than the Bruins, Curtis, who got waxed again last night, which local team's fans should feel a bit better about their state this morning? Celtics off the Pacers win and a comeback from down 18-4. Red Sox, hope springs eternal. It was like Red Sox porn day yesterday for me. We had the sale, then the closer, then Cora. That was pretty good.
We have to, later on in this show this morning, play the audio of the most cringeworthy comment from a host during a player interview in the history of WEEI.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I agree with you on that. Good tease. Or the Patriots, who got great news from Rap Sheet yesterday, confirming that the opt-outs are coming back. Plus, there's good quarterback movement afoot in the NFL, which is going to shake a reasonable starter free. So take your pick. Who's feeling better, Celtics, Red Sox, or Pats?
In my opinion, and this is not just because I've been given a little bit more power in this building, yesterday hearing Chris Sale made me think, not entirely different, but I like his sort of vibe yesterday. He sounded optimistic.
Yep.
He is a stand-up guy. I don't know why he doesn't do more interviews. He helps himself immensely. It helps the team because you saw yesterday, by and large, the Red Sox reaction on social media and the text line has been 80-90% negative.
Yep.
Following the Sale interview, it was like, let's go. Let's get baseball started.
We had a handful of callers call right in and like motivational stuff that he gave. Like, he should be the Celtics coach.
Right. And I think that when you have a guy like Alex Cora back, despite all the reasons he was gone, it's clear that the guys love him. I mean, Chris Sale went on and on and on. I mean, I actually felt bad for Renicky at one point. But, I mean, he was basically saying that we were not going to accept any other manager other than Alex Cora.
Yep. I thought it was a good day. Now, the Celtics were down 18-4, and things were looking in bad shape. And it was, what a week for this franchise. Really unbelievable.
You know what this week showed me? You actually mentioned this before the show this morning, that Fourier had made a comment that Tatum and Brown are more Robin than Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty good line from Christian, and it's not some insane thing to say, but the Celtics media cartel are unlike any other group in the Boston media. They defend the wall like Jerry Thornton does with the Patriots.
Yep.
But Jerry Thornton is a self-proclaimed fan. He's not actually writing for the Boston Globe or EEI.com. It's just amazing to me. There's no urgency from the team. Last night, I know they came back and won, and that's better than losing. But in my opinion, the way you start a game reflects your coach. If you open up that game after this week where you have been killed unlike any time in the last 20 years, I don't think there's been a week like this in Boston for Danny Ainge in the last since he became the president of basketball operations.
Right.
And so you get to Friday night, and everybody's watching national TV games, 7:30 Friday night, and you open trailing 18-4?
But Kemba had a night. Like, they got lucky, basically. For them to win, Kemba's got to have a week off.
Right.
Come in, be healthy, be fresh, and hit a bunch of shots. The stars, I mean, Fourier actually looks even more correct about with his Robin statement last night. Again, Tatum had a bad night. Brown had a bunch of turnovers. So I don't know why these Celtics... who were the media guys that got upset about this?
So,
Barstool Greeny.
Yeah, Barstool Greeny, and then there's like the Comcast cartel with the Celtics. I mean, it is just... Last night, I saw Trini Kuznarek do a sports update, and she said, the Celtics, though, with a win tonight, get back right in the playoff picture. I'm like, are you serious? Are we really moving the goalpost for this organization that they get back into the playoff picture?
Well, you got to hear this Brad Stevens postgame comment. This is amazing to me. This... I mean, this. If, close your eyes. This sounds like a Little League coach whose team is like fighting to get out of last place. This is after the win last night. Here's Brad Stevens.
You know, the first part of the season that we've gone through where you're treading water in a lot of ways, you have a better chance of your team ripping apart and staying together and just kind of galvanizing itself. And that's all we've talked about. Just stay together. Our greatest legacy that we'll leave, no matter how many games we win, is how we treat each other in these moments and how we stay together so that we can ultimately become as good as we can be. And that's it. So I think that the bench was loud. I think that the starters were loud. I think Kimba helped will us to a win in a lot of ways. But I think it was just a matter of everybody just deciding that the most important thing was to support each other and be together.
That is awful.
How about that quote? No matter how many games we win, ..
Who sounds more depressed, Brad Stevens or Charlie Baker?
Baker's got great favorability ratings. You keep knocking him. Maybe not after the vaccination website.
NBA players like react to that?
No.
That was awful. I mean, a little bit of energy.
In fact, Jeff Goodman, our buddy, was on Thursday with Dalen Keefe, and he basically said he's heard from other players, former players in the league, Stevens is just playing too nice. They need a Kevin Garnett type of former player to come in and coach this team or be on the bench like the Miami Heat have with Udonis Haslam to fire this team up.
And that makes Christian's point even better, because if you have a Batman, you don't need a head coach to be a type A personality.
Yep.
If you have a guy that's on your team like a Kevin Garnett, like any others that have been there throughout the league, like a LeBron, whatever, you don't need a head coach really at all, but specifically to get your team motivated. And the fact that this team has tuned out their coach, which is clear, they've tuned him out. I mean, you hear that guy after the game last night.
I don't think they've tuned him out. I think he tells them to play this way. We talked earlier in the week on the Greg Hill Show about his distaste of having a captain. He wants everybody to be a captain in their own way. I should like his philosophy. It's kind of communist. I mean,
that sounds like second grade. Honestly, that sounds like, no, Christopher, you got to pass the ball around. You know, don't hog the ball.
Well, I mean, but you see it on the court. Like, it goes into Thompson in the post. He's going to shoot it. He's not going to look for, like, Tatum or Brown to kick it back out again. These guys, and you know, hell, Tice hit a big three late, and so they had a good night for role players. Last night was one of those nights where I guess Stevens' philosophy looked good, except for the stars were off, and you know Kemba's not going to be like that every night.
And the other thing is, they're attempting to do something that has been done once in the last 20-plus years, which is win an NBA Finals without a superstar. Outside of the Pistons in the early 2000s.
Don't say that. They have two superstars. They have two
all-stars.
I feel
like they're both Robins.
They're not. If they were superstars, then they would be taking control of the team and not opening a game after a week where your team has been dragged through the mud, where your coach has been called to be fired.
Now, Tatum did have COVID. So to Cam Newton's excuse earlier in the week, maybe it's the COVID effect.
We couldn't get to 9-10 without Cam. But it's true. You can't win an NBA championship without a superstar player in the NBA, especially today. And you have a head coach that wants no part of a superstar. Not only that, he can't coach a superstar. That's why Kyrie was here and gone.
To take Steven's side of it, is he looking at the team and saying, well, Tatum's only 22. He's not a star yet. That's what our eyes tell us, right? He's got a potential to be a great, great player in this league. Some people have already anointed him top 10. But I think that's way too soon. But maybe he's saying, look, he's not there yet, so therefore I need to build everybody else up on the team to support him. Because Ainge hasn't given me the guys that are going to support him by great talent. I mean, what's Stevens going to do? Look at the roster. It's not like Ainge has surrounded him with a great third, fourth, and fifth option.
Do you think this team should be fighting for the eighth playoff spot?
No, of course not. But they did lose Marcus Smart. That's another part of it.
Right. I mean, they went into a season and lost Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and made it to the NBA, the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, this organization should be far closer to the Nets and the Sixers than they are to the Knicks.
Yep.
And today they're not, and it's because they've tuned them out. And I know Wick went across the street this week and, you know, said all the right things that an owner would say who's not going to fire his guy. I mean, he was defending people. He took ownership, no pun intended. He took blame. And I think that's what a good leader does. I hope he's saying different things behind the scenes.
At least he's talking, I guess. There are a lot of owners in town.
That was going to be...
The other thing is not even speaking.
We haven't heard from Bob Kraft on the record about losing Tom Brady.
Yep.
Outside of a a very lawyerly written statement when Tom Brady decided to sign with the...
Well, he did the interview with CBS, and it got spiked. We still don't know why that thing didn't air Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, so Friday before the Super Bowl, there was a teaser on this Boston CBS local website, and it had a quick, like, 30-second clip of Kraft saying that he's rooting for Tom.
Yep.
And it said that this this interview will air on CBS Sunday morning before the Super Bowl. Never saw the light of day. So we haven't heard from Robert Kraft. We haven't heard from Jonathan Kraft. We haven't heard from Belichick at all since the final blow of the season.
Nope.
And then you have the Red Sox, who usually you hear from John Henry at least once around this time.
I think they will probably talk at some point, right? They do it once in spring training. So, well, he and Tom Werner will talk.
I know it's self-serving to say this, but why do the Celtics go on their rights holders and just talk to them about the state of the team? When things are bad, they are there to answer questions. I don't understand. The Red Sox have this huge disconnect with their fan base. You have the owners who have won World Series, they have paid, they have done all those right things, but there is no real emotional connection between John Henry and anything. Well, I guess John Henry and this fan base at all. And you need people. Like, Wick did himself a favor.
He just sold out spring training tickets. What are you talking about? They're in fine shape.
The audience, when Chris Sale joined us, there's people here that grew up diehard Red Sox fans.
Yep, and they still are, by the way. Right. Their ratings are still... Well, we didn't see last year's ratings. They had to be terrible.
Well, they were down last year. But no, but they are part of the culture here. People here want to like the Red Sox.
Yep.
And if you put a guy like Chris Sale on with the Greg Hill Show, the people there go, oh, wow, you know, here's a guy to root for. And if John Henry, when he went on The Competitor, well, he had his games on EEI, you know, people relate. That was probably his smartest move, I mean, outside of the outlet that he did it on. I mean, I think that that was... If he did that more often, people would connect with him. I grew up in...
Or now, Linda Pizzuti. I mean, she might run the team. She should come on.
I mean, I remember it vividly, the great Dennis and Callahan interviews with Larry Lucchino. Those were awesome. I mean, Larry was there every week.
Is he still with the Woo Sox now? Is he with the team? He's still around, right?
Oh, yeah. He's going to live to like 300. But he, you know, he came on, and it probably damaged the relationship between Theo and himself, but... He was the bad cop of the Red Sox. He'd come on, he'd answer the tough questions, he'd talk about it. And it doesn't exist with the Red Sox, it doesn't exist with the Patriots, and it's never existed with the Bruins.
Well, to answer my own question, the Patriots should feel better about themselves, because I agree with you. The Celtics last night, in fact, even like the game itself, they got kind of lucky. I mean, Holiday missed a three, would have tied it with like a minute to go. Despite taking a 10-point lead, they still sort of had to claw onto a win. And that's a game you should be... running through the proverbial wall for it, like desperation to capital D. They come out and they're behind 18-4. Then they have to hang on late. So it's still concerning. I mean,
it's
so
concerning.
And
how
they have nowhere to go. Like, I don't know what is the card other than Marcus Smart coming back. Goodman was on Thursday and suggested they trade Jaylen Brown, which I don't think is that ridiculous of a statement. They may have to do that.
Well, in order to change the culture, you're going to have to trade one of those guys, because what else are you going to trade to get any value back in return?
Well, right, unless they just have a 10-year plan, and Wick said that with us when he joined us in December, that basically these guys are young. When we want a title, all our players, our star players, were 30. So just hope that all their draft picks build up over the course of 3 or 4 years. And hell, if the fans are this patient, which you said they are.
Yes.
Most patient, uninspired, I don't know how you described it. But maybe people will wait around for a little while.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, I'm trying to find it. Nick Wright tweeted 2 days ago, and he compared the heist of Danny Ainge on the Power in Boston as the second greatest Ponzi scheme behind Bernie Madoff. That he has just totally put the, you know, just lied, or not lied, but has created this facade that he is this brilliant general manager.
I had a call in this week about Ainge, things piling up on Ainge. I criticized his draft in a memorable lead on the Greco Morning Show. And then Finn was all over me from the Globe. Like, God, how could you leave out Time Lord? What a terrible take. Well, yes, Robert Williams is a good pick 3 years ago.
But
right?
I don't know when Boston shifted to this way of thinking. I just always grew up that if the team sucked, you called for the coach or manager to be fired. That's sort of part of it. And if the team
played... it's not flippant, by the way. This has like been building. It's not like people are just... It's 18 years, one title... It's not like a sports talk radio ploy that you're just calling for somebody to be fired every week.
It's been a decade since they made an NBA Finals. The Red Sox have won 2 World Series since then. And both the presidents and general managers of the 2 Red Sox World Series champion teams have been fired since Danny Ainge went to his last NBA Finals.
Yep.
So,
but then again, people praise the Patriots. They had one owner for all this time. They've had Belichick. They've had stability. I mean, so in some circles, that is praised as a reason for success.
Well, yes, but you think that would be said if Bill didn't win six in 20 years?
Yeah, no, that's a big
difference. And the other thing is, like, you know, even the Bruins fans, they made it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And they lost. It was a bad performance. They should have beaten the Blues, but they made it to Game 7.
Yeah, they've had higher highs.
And the Bruins fans immediately were killing the team, killing them after that game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Sweeney's taking heat.
Right, and that's healthy. That's why Alabama is Alabama with football, because everybody down there lives and breathes Alabama football. So if they don't play well, they get held accountable. And the reaction of Chad Finn and many others, he's not alone, to be these, like, standard bearers at the gate to just yell at us if we dare to criticize a team that by anybody's evaluation is underperforming.
Yep. We won a lot of playoff games over the last decade.
Oh, that was the other quote of the week.
Right. I mean, when Wick says with us in December and this week across the street, he says that we've been to three of the last four conference finals.
Yeah, yeah, that's a
that is a Indianapolis Colts type of thinking.
All right, so 617-779-7937. Should fans be patient about the Celtics? Is this going to turn around? Do you feel encouraged after a win last night? And how would you rank them in the kettle with the thematic Red Sox or Patriots? Because I do think the Pats have had some good news this week, which we'll get to coming up. But Dave and Natick launches off Ken and Curtis. Hello, Dave.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Nice to hear you guys playing nice on the weekend. It's pretty cute to see. anyway, I think... a couple things. I'm not panicking about the Celtics right now. I think the season's not going as well as they could, but if they go on a 8-2 run, all of a sudden they're back in the third or fourth seed in the East and back to where I would expect them to be. Other than Larry Bird in 1980, I'm trying to think of a time where you had your best player be under the age of 25 without some sort of all-star caliber older player like a Shaq or a Kareem or somebody like that, or a David Robinson with Kawhi Leonard, or a Tim Duncan with Kawhi Leonard, I should say, where you've had an NBA champion capable team when you had your best player be that young, and there really aren't any.
Well, is that age's fault, though, Dave, that he doesn't have that guy around them right now?
So, I mean, at a certain point, basketball is unique, probably closest to hockey, in that you can't draft, you know, some star player in the 20s in the second round like you can in football. In baseball, the Red Sox will be back quick because they can spend more money than hardly any other team.
That's
so
true. That's true.
In basketball, if you don't draft it and trade for it, you're kind of in a spot where you're not going to be a transformative organization. Now, I do think between Tatum and Brown, I wouldn't be stunned if I see them win a championship in the next 3 to 4 years. I would be hard-pressed to think it's in the next 1 to 2. And the other point I'll make is that of the four teams that made the conference finals last year, the Lakers are the only ones that have a high record above 500. The Heat, the Celtics, and the Nuggets are all right around 500 or below. So, you know, let's not blow up something just because we're impatient. The last thing I'll say is the Jays have had their careers almost backwards. They had a lot of early success with veteran players. And most superstars go through this phase where they have to figure out how to win a game by themselves,
yep,
how to beat a team that they shouldn't beat. That's not been their experience, so they kind of have to go through this at some point.
Dave, you make a lot of good points, but I would just ask, how patient should we be considering Ainge has been here since 2003? He's won one, been to another final. I mean, when you look at the other teams in this city, they appear to be held to a much higher standard.
Well, I think there's different logistics with all those teams that make them all quite different in terms of how to go through success. You don't maintain 20 years of success as an NBA franchise, with very few exceptions, like the Spurs were able to do that for a long time. But you can't expect the same mechanics to happen in basketball because of salary cap issues, because it's always about your best player or best two players, not your, you know, how deep you are 1 through 8. So, to me, if they're not a strong contender, if not winning an NBA final within 3 years, I think you have to look at moving on from the GM. Possibly before then, if you think that Brad Stevens is the type of coach that can't be a motivator of men, that gets that extra, you know, extra something out of the superstar, then you got to look at moving on from him perhaps sooner. I do think Danny Ainge bears a brunt of the issue right now, because if you look at the roster that they had when they were going to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago, when you've traded guys like, not physically traded, but when you've traded off on the roster, like your Al Horfords and your Jay Crowders and those veteran guys that can allow a young player to be more successful than if you have to have that young player drive it, that roster has been downgraded other than the Tatums and the Smart and that sort of thing. So I think Danny does deserve a lot of it, but I wouldn't give up on it yet. He's put him in a great spot.
But I guess the last thing I would say, Dave, is that I heard for years the same people that are yelling at Christian Fourier for having the audacity to say that Jaylen Brown's a Robin, not a Batman, that he won this unbelievable trade with the Brooklyn Nets, that he pantsed Brooklyn, and that these picks were going to lead to another dynasty in Boston or what, you know, whatever they said at the time. And now today, on February 27th, 2021, the Nets are the favorite to win the East, and the Celtics are barely in the playoffs. So it seems to me that I've been told over and over again that this is really hard. Ainge is great at trading, and just be patient. Well, if they pants the Nets, and the Nets are now the best team in the East, and they're where they are, it seems like we're just going to be waiting forever for this to turn around.
Well, the Nets have maybe a 2 or 3 year window, because Kevin Durant has got to be 35. And he's not going to be playing at that level when he's 39. In terms of being patient, it's like I said before, there's been one franchise, being the Boston Celtics, where your best player was under the age of 25 and you still had sustained wins. So I don't think they emerge into a dynasty for, has the potential to emerge into a dynasty for another 3 years or so, because I hate to break it to you, Tatum, well, I think you believe this, but most people out there that think Tatum and Jaylen Brown are world beater all-time greats, they're not going to be Kobe, they're not going to be Michael, they're not going to be Shaq, they're not going to be as impactful, a lot of those players, and they didn't win until they were older than Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum are right now or will be in the next couple years.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Good points there.
The big question is, can they be Walter McCarty?
Durant's 32, by the way, but he is out now until the All-Star break. But as Goodman said, Brown's never going to be at a higher trade value than he is at this moment, right? I mean, unless you think he's going to develop into a superstar, but I got my doubts. He had a great start to the year, no question about that. So maybe you do keep Tatum, keep one guy, and flip him for some veteran talent to go around the rest of the group. But
trying to figure out
three-year window, it's amazing. Like you get Dave's obviously a knowledgeable Celtics guy, but he's given him 3 more years. Right. Belichick won a Super Bowl a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever. Right. People want him fired. Tangway wants him out by the end of the year.
It's totally different. It just is. It's just the DNA of Celtics, because many of the people that are diehard Celtics fans and people that cover the team are in their 40s and 50s. I mean, obviously they skew young too, but a lot of the vocal people are. And they grew up with such great success, and they have such an emotional relationship with Danny Ainge that it's almost impossible for them to come to Ripley.
Well, that's a problem then. Dave and Lynn next on Ken and Curtis on WEI. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, you?
Good. Getting kind of tired of listening to all the Celtics, excuse me, people out here. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. They blamed Kyrie when he was here. He wasn't the problem. The same problems are here. Those two guys do not get along. Everybody thinks they do. They don't get along. They don't have a legit point guard to give people the ball in their shots. They take bad shots. That's why they give up big leads all the time.
Yep.
And everybody just lets Danny get away with murder. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's
terrible,
amazing. Basketball. Like Tatum takes terrible shots, right? I mean, he hits some of them. But, like, man, how many fadeaways does he shoot in a game?
I mean, Mike Gorman said earlier this week across the street that it looks – they play like they met each other on the ride over, that the Celtics have no cohesion whatsoever. And that, to me, is another sign that Brad is just not getting through to them. I mean, who else would you blame for that?
Brad needs to go take the BC job.
All right. Now you're talking.
Jared Allen was out there, went to Cleveland for a draft pick. You can't tell me he's not better than what the Celtics have. Can't tell me that.
Right. Yeah, it's...
All right, Dave, thanks for the call.
It's just frustrating as a fan of Boston sports just to see people continually make excuses for an organization. I mean, it has been since 2008 that they won a title. And you look at where they are right now, how many different sort of marker points in those last 13 years have we said... They're on the come. Just wait a year. They're going to use that unprotected first round and trade it for this guy.
I mean, they did get unbelievable picks of Brown and Tatum, where they were third overall for those two to be all-stars. I mean, that's a great job by Ainge. There's no questioning.
Right.
And that's part of that, right?
Of course. But what is the point? Like, I always do this with Patriots fans. Oh, Belichick's smart to stockpile picks. It's like, well, the stockpile doesn't matter if you don't, if you get freaking Jarrett Stidham and Danny Etling. It doesn't matter who you stockpile.
Yeah,
you need players.
Right, and that's why last year's draft was looking terrible. Langford, Grant Williams, Tremont Waters, these guys are not helping. They needed one of those guys to be something. And I know it's only year two, but God, zero from that group. All right, let's work the Patriots into this a bit. Oh, a couple texts quick. 804 text, Celtics situation is like when you've been drinking and get pulled over by a cop. The longer you talk, the worse it gets. They need to make a trade now. 860 text, Jaylen Brown is the problem. He always thought he was above everybody else. He had the issue with Kyrie and an issue with Smart. Good player, but all he does is score or attempts to brings nothing else. So there is some anti-Jaylen Brown sentiment out there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, they're going to have to make a major change. I mean, you don't. Last night, I'll go back to it. You come into the game last night after an unprecedented week of criticism for your organization. Your GM and your coach are getting destroyed on both stations all day. And you show up and you trail 18-4. Like,
it's
how
amazing.
Is that possible?
Well, I mean, Indiana hit all their threes. But again, it gets back to, like, how do you not have the – how are you not up on guys and taking that away?
Right.
Can we play the Stevens cut once again?
Oh, we have to, yeah.
Because I think it's amazing. This is what Brad Stevens said after the win.
You know, the first part of the season that we've gone through where you're treading water in a lot of ways, you have a better chance of your team ripping apart and staying together and just kind of galvanizing itself. And that's all we've talked about, just stay together. Our greatest legacy that we'll leave, no matter how many games we win, is how we treat each other in these moments and how we stay together so that we can ultimately become as good as we can be.
All right, I'm going to bed. No matter how many games we win, like, this is a professional franchise. But it's run like a feel-good, like, summer camp, eighth-grade camp or something, you know?
I mean, I feel like this is probably why you see almost no success among coaches that leave college and go to the NBA. It's a totally different mindset.
Do you think there's part of it that the ownership is afraid of the tag? We can't get guys to come to Boston very easily. There's a knock against us. We need a coach who is welcoming to superstars and talent.
Sorry to disappoint you.
Is there like a, we're petrified of being a hard nut coach team where a Belichick type alienates people further. We have to be open and let the players run the show.
Well, but you only do that when you have a superstar who is accomplished in the NBA. You don't do that with two guys that are combined to age 42.
Like that's true. Like if any time you could get through to them.
Right.
With a tough coach.
You should be
now.
Malleable when you're under 25 and you have yet to win an NBA championship or an MVP and you don't have your own, like, massive shoe deal. You know, you should be able to reach these guys.
And I can't imagine Tatum and Brown are happy. Like, just with the way the organization has talked this week, the fact that they're kind of putting it on the players, didn't you get the feeling that they're putting it on Tatum and Brown?
Yes.
Like, Wick and Ainge, when they're talking, okay, part of it's my fault, but our stars have to be better. And that would, so I know he, like, Wick got real snippy at the question about ink is still dry on the contract and they're not going anywhere.
Right.
But I could see them trying to shoot their way out of town.
Oh, absolutely.
At some point.
They would be the outlier if they were unhappy and they didn't in the NBA.
Yep. Which is another issue. That's the Brady effect. It's Brady's fault. And we'll get to that before the show is over.
He was a free agent.
It's the Ken and Curtis Show. Seth Wickersham going to be our guest at 11 a.m. this morning, senior writer for ESPN. He's got a new book coming out. It's Better to Be Feared, Inside the New England Patriots Dynasty. How did they achieve and sustain greatness, and what were the costs?
He should win a Pulitzer for that first story, breaking it with Don Van Natta on the Storm Brewing in Foxborough. Because for
2017,
weeks, yep.
Early 2018, what was it?
It was when I got wind of the story, but I didn't tweet it, and then Bruce Allen did, and everybody yelled at me. But anyway,
we all remember that.
That was a great story that came out, and he's been proven right on basically everything.
And Volin is back in at noon today. Let me pull up his text. He had a major league tease for what he's going to be talking about on the show today. He's a lot of topics, but he says, let's talk quarterbacks. I know how Belichick really feels about Cam Newton.
All right. Is he going to make it?
Big tease from Volin, noon today. How does Belichick feel about Cam Newton? We find out at noon, but let's get the training real quick.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back to more of the Ken and Curtis Show on EEI.
You know, this is kind of an underrated storyline. I mean, we covered it when it happened, but every time the Patriots struggled defensively last year, you couldn't point out, well, they didn't have Patrick Chung, they didn't have Dante Hightower, but all that is true. They lost some big-time players due to opt-outs. On the offensive side of the ball, Marcus Cannon, who'd been a starting tackle for them for several years, all of those guys opted out, leaving a big hole for the New England Patriots. I am told all of them are going to opt back in for the 2021 season. So Hightower's going to be back. Chung expected back. Marcus Cannon do a big number. And, of course, they have, as of right now, replaced him on the offensive line. We'll see how they figure those things. But he is expected back as well. So much-needed ammo before free agency.
Take that, Curtis, Patriots hater. That is why Pats fans should be feeling a little bit better about themselves this morning. That's part one of two. That is Ian Rappaport, NFL Network.
Bear with me, not to be the bearer of bad news here, but Ian Rappaport is a member of NFL Media, correct?
Correct.
This story reflects very positively upon the New England Patriots, correct?
Yeah, of course, yes.
So do you remember before Matthew Stafford was traded from the Lions to the Rams that out of the blue, there was this report from Tommy Curran on 93.7 FM and across the WEI Sports Radio Network where he said that expect the busiest offseason in Bill Belichick's tenure, that they're bringing
aggressive.
In the masses. They're
going to
be aggressive.
Uncharacteristically aggressive was the phrase.
There it is. And that was then later discussed as potentially some spin to get Matthew Stafford to potentially reconsider his thoughts.
That was your spin on it.
Well, it was widely reported.
And then you have
this situation where out of the blue, we get word that Cannon, Chung, and Hightower are all coming back.
Correct.
At the same time, we get those reports. That's coming from the Patriots. And in my opinion, there is the potential that that was simply done to make this look like a championship caliber destination, that these guys, specifically, really, the only one, in my opinion, that matters is Hightower. Because
oh, come on. Marcus Cannon and Patrick Chung don't matter?
Adrian Phillips played really well last year. And he's going to be cheaper, I think.
Okay, well, great. Then you have an additional guy to work in the mix.
I love Patrick Chung. He's balls, huge in big games. Dante Hightower is awesome.
Say about that drop, Nick.
I love Hightower. Without him, they don't do the comeback in Super Bowl 51.
Right.
He's great.
Zeus.
But in my opinion, it's a little fishy the way it came out.
Well, so what's wrong with that, though? I mean, this is not like them putting out the hype video the day after the Super Bowl, which
is all part of. But it's all part of the same offseason. They are concerned about spinning things in a way that I have never seen
Bill
Belichick franchise
well, good. What do you want ownership to be? Not concerned?
To spin? I don't want spin. I want action.
Well, this is action. They're getting three players back, and that's good news. I don't understand what the downside of that is.
Okay, I'm saying if this was simply spin, it's not good unless it's backed with action. I think
so. You don't think they're coming back?
I don't think it's for sure. No.
So you think Kraft would say, "Hey, these three guys are coming back," without consulting them whether they're coming back?
Also, Curran had this weeks ago with Devin McCourty.
Yeah, that was right. Devin McCourty started all this, which is all part of the same machine, I'm sure.
Okay, maybe they're all coming back, but the fact that you said, why would Bob Kraft spin this? He called Stephen A. Smith during commercial breaks on First Take.
Well, no, I understand.
To spin what he was saying about the organization and the departure of Tom Brady.
But what's wrong with that? Why wouldn't you try to keep your fans engaged and give them good news?
Because that's cowardly to do that. You go in front of a camera and you discuss it.
Well, I would prefer that, but this is their method. And it's,
okay. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I think it's great to get Hightower back. I think that guy is awesome. I love Dante Hightower. I love Patrick Chung. He's balls. He is. He throws great parties in New Hampshire. But I don't know. I mean,
And we'll get to part two of why this is great news with the quarterback derby. But back to the Celtics. The Dino thematic today was which fan base outside the Bruins feels better about themselves, Celtics, Red Sox, Patriots. Celtics are last in both of our estimation, I think. But we got into talking about you and I, big Celtics guy.
Huge. I got the league pass.
Yep. But the 617, we got into talking about who should they consider trading Brown or Tatum, which Jeff Goodman from Stadium suggested on the Dale O'Keefe show. 617 text, Brown is the better player. Tatum is the more talented player. I want the Celtics to build around the two of them, but you may need to trade one to get pieces. That's the reality they're in.
Right.
I mean, their war chest of picks are gone. They nobody on the roster is tradable. I mean, certainly Kemba's not.
And this is clearly not a destination that superstars in the NBA would love to join.
Right.
So it's just a tough situation for the NBA. I hate the way the NBA runs. The salary cap is impossible to understand. The trade exemptions and all these bizarre bird rights, different things. It's just I get a headache thinking about it. So it's not for me, but I think that Celtics fans should be the angriest right now.
Let's go to Paulie in the truck. Hello, Paulie.
I'll tell you if hey, what do you say, guys? I'll tell you, if I could get trade Brown for a bona fide big man, then I'd do it in a heartbeat. That's what they really need. Since they lost Kendrick Perkins, they really haven't had a bona fide big man since those days. And you can see that. I would absolutely, without question right now, to try to patch it up quickly to give them, to try to slow down these teams that are coming back on them in the second half with these charges. I'd pick up Boogie Cousins. I would. Whether Brad Stevens wanted him on the team or not, I don't care what he thinks of him as personally. They need defense because they are just getting rolled over when these teams decide to come back on them. They just put the pedal to the metal. There's nothing the Celtics can do to stop them.
Even Paulie,
if you get Marcus Smart back and you bring Boogie Cousins in, what you do when these teams go on their charges in the second half is you put your Smart, Cousins, and your other two best defenders plus Tatum on the floor, and that should slow them down a little bit. And you'll remain in and probably win most of these ball games that you're in because you just have no defense right now at this point. But I'll tell you, in terms of the Patriots, if Cannon comes back, we won't need anything on the offensive line, and that includes if Tooney goes. You take your best tackle, you make him your left tackle out of all the tackles that you have, but you'll definitely have enough offensive linemen. You'll have enough. Your running backs will be up stable. We'll be fine. You got Vitali coming back. We'll have a real fullback. You'll need a tight end and two receivers, and of course a quarterback. And I found out last night on Mutt's show that Garoppolo is good for two more years with San Fran. I thought it was only one. I guess I'm going to have to say forget about Alex Smith and bring in Fitzy and still draft my boy Bam Ellinger out of Texas in the later rounds. I think he'll fall to a third or fourth round. When you think he's going to be there, though, make sure you get him before he's gone.
Oh, that's a little Ryan Fitzpatrick vote at quarterback this morning.
I watched too much Texas Longhorn football. They always seem to be on Fox or on the Red River Shootout when they play Oklahoma. Ellen, I want no part of their quarterback. He was not great.
Well, third or fourth round, he'll be there in the seventh.
Yeah.
In regards to the Pat stuff, like Cannon, okay, Vitali, you want to throw him in, like all the rest of the opt-outs. That is significant because, I mean, Paulie's right. You can then focus on one or two marquee free agents. That's all they really need. If they don't get a quarterback, it's not the – I know you're going to vomit if I say this. It's not the worst thing to bring Cam back for a year and use the draft to build up everything else if they get Micah Parsons in the first round and build the rest of the team plus the opt-outs returning, and then you worry about the quarterback a year from now.
So a year from now – you still don't have a quarterback. You have a good defense.
They were 7-9 with Cam with COVID last year. You're still a playoff team.
Cam regressed as the season went on.
He did not. Week 17 against the Jets had a big game.
So you take stock in that game where it was literally run the clock out, let's get to the beach.
The Jets
and get
were
away.
Desperate.
Desperate? A loss would have benefited them.
All right, but he looked good. I mean, he had.
You can't use the Jets as an example that he was improving. He was awful. That Monday night game against the Bills. Awful. This is why
COVID season.
This is why
you want
Wiggy,
to play Cam's excuse again from earlier in the week with Brandon Marshall.
I would rather not. This is why Wiggy's point and your point here doesn't hold any water. If you go further along in the season, he is A, further removed from COVID. B, he is more immersed in the Patriots offense. He should have been like Brady, improved. And the reason he didn't improve is because he's not that good. And we also found out this weekend that when you look back to that period, and Ben Volen, when he joins us at noon, he can tell us that because it's what he texted me last week, that he missed one practice and one walkthrough.
Yeah, but he's still the effects of COVID. Erod missed an entire year with myocarditis.
Okay, did
look at Tatum right now. Does he look normal?
Cam Newton said all he lost was a sense of smell.
Yeah, but... There's
he didn't have myocarditis, so why are you even referencing
that? But there's a mental cognition part of it that we don't know how it affects people. So, I mean, it could have been significant. I mean, just in terms of picking up terminology,
but that's not what he said. He said that their terminology went on when he wasn't there. That was a massive excuse. You missed a single practice.
But you focus on the terminology, that word.
Like the offense kept going.
Right. What does that even mean?
Well,
it didn't go anywhere all year, so I don't know. The offense sucked.
No, I'm sure they installed stuff. Zoom. I mean, they might have missed a practice. There probably was some Zoom install that week.
The oop-de-oop right from Varsity Blues.
Because weren't they were going to play, and then the game was pushed back, right?
Right.
So they had a game coming up. He was not a part of that planning.
He was there all week through Friday. Friday night, they took the test. Saturday morning, he revealed he tested positive.
Right.
He doesn't go to Kansas City.
They moved the game to Monday.
They play Monday in the tight locker room, which everybody was said that they were spreading it like wildfire.
Right, so he missed the walkthrough there, so that's a big install day.
Right. And then and then they come back, and the next week was their bye week because they pushed the game against the Broncos back.
Yeah, but when did they push that game back? Weren't they prepping for the Broncos
most of the week? Gilmore got it in the middle of the week. I don't know the exact dates of all this stuff.
I think it was like Friday they pushed it back.
Yeah, see, it was late in the week, so they had a whole week he missed there. So
they played Monday. They landed Tuesday at 3 in the morning. Tuesday's their off day. They go back Wednesday. They had to leave because there was another player on the offensive line on the practice squad that tested positive.
Well, he missed a week. The point is he missed a week. If you missed a week of school.
I was stopped and stagnant for a week, 2 weeks.
See? Stopped and stagnant.
His whole team was stagnant for 2 weeks. No, they had one practice.
Well, what if they were Zooming?
He's on the Zoom.
Oh, he might not have been.
What? Why would he?
I don't know.
He just lost sense of smell. You think he can't look at a Zoom?
The point is, that was a bad 3 weeks. That's when the season got unraveled. If things go differently there, they're still engaged. Everything changes based on those 3 weeks. They should have beat the Chiefs. Probably beat them if Cam plays that game. And then the Niners and the Broncos games were just an abomination. So it all went bad. But I want to get to Jeff Howe's thing, which you got into a beef about. Well, no, you and Howe were, like, sniping about something else.
Oh, so I mistaken.
Well, hold on. We're up against the break. Okay. We'll do the Howe stuff coming back next. It's Ken and Curtis.
You're listening to, and we're sorry, the Ken and Curtis Show on EEI.
Well, it's been a tough week for Chris Curtis. Let's put it this way. Yesterday, there was a real-life trash man with his trash truck outside of 83 Leo Birmingham Parkway. He was actually out. That thing got like 20,000 views, your confrontation with the trash guy after the show yesterday.
There has never been a faker news story in the history of sports radio than what happened. I had an argument with Derek the Steelers fan who said that the trash collectors were in serious danger of getting COVID-19 from picking up other people's trash. I simply said that my guess is these great men and women take off their gloves, put on hand sanitizer, and then eat or drink. That seems to be logical.
Yeah, but it came off as teachers are more important than trash collectors, and they have a greater risk of getting COVID.
That wasn't my intention. But I do think teachers are more important than trash collectors.
Okay, all right, so here we go again. What? Now,
I mean, what's more important than teaching people?
Picking up trash is pretty important to me. I don't know.
They're tied. They're both great. I don't care.
But anyway, so you're going to go on a real live trash truck run for charity next week.
Fake news again. Haven't signed up for that. I have to check with my family's attorney.
Well, you can't turn down charity. I mean, this is going to raise big money.
I'll have my dad write a check. Just tell me where to do it.
The old show, you would have done this. But anyway, yes. You also, more on that later, but you also got into a beef with Jeff Howe of The Athletic, who you misquoted. Doug Kaya had said something which you attributed to Howe, and he got very sensitive about that. Yeah,
sorry. We have what's called sleep deprivation, and on Thursday or Wednesday, whatever the hell the day was, I remembered a tweet from the night before, and I didn't double-check it, and I thought it was Jeff Howe who tweeted, Cam has a MVP reputation, which will lead to other receivers still wanting to come to New England on the free agent market.
Right.
In reality, it was a Doug Kayyad tweet that I had seen. Mm-hmm. So, wrong job. Bad job by me.
Want to apologize to Jeff right now?
No, I did on Twitter. I said, my apologies. And then...
You actually didn't say that. I'll see your tweet.
I said, my apologies.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I said that you were the one, Jeff, who said that last spring, Jarrett Stidham was already further ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, that's Hal's lowest moment, which I think he's admitted to. I think he's apologized for that.
Everything he writes is basically approved from Stacey James. Like, it is pathetic to be a grown man writing about a team and begging to get like a little morsel from the organization.
Well, he had good intel this week. Now, you're telling me this came from Stacey James and the Patriots, this in on every quarterback report? Because it's pretty thorough now. Here's what he said. The Patriots have been aggressively pursuing the quarterback trade market. They have been thwarted by inflated prices. Conversations with every potential trade target in the league spoke about Stafford and Wentz, but were not serious contenders due to the asking price.
Wait, hold on. But I thought they were aggressive.
But not for those guys.
Why?
Because they suck. They're not worth two first rounds. You think Stafford's worth two firsts?
No, he contradicts himself within his own story. He says that they were in on everyone.
Yeah, they talked with them. They weren't serious contenders with those guys.
Why? Those are the best guys on the market.
Yeah, but not for that price.
Oh, okay. So I don't understand then. So why would you be
like,
on everyone?
I'm in on a Lexus conversation, but I can't afford it. So I'm out.
But you're not really then.
Yeah, you're not really. Yeah.
So then you're just parroting this. You want
okay, but
the organization.
You're focusing on that part.
No, the organization wants the fan base to think that they're in on everyone. Every team in this town does that.
Well, forget about Wentz. Like Stafford, yes. Best talent that was out there, they weren't in on him for the price that he went for. They were not in on Wentz, and nobody blames them, right? Do you?
No, I don't blame them.
Okay, so Carson Wentz we can rule out. But Stafford is a story. He didn't want to come here, per some reports. Patricia may have been a factor, or it may have just been the high asking price. So I don't know what the truth is there, but, you know, I would agree that's a miss. But if he didn't want to come here, that's not their fault.
Jeff Howe said that story's point was that the Patriots have been aggressive and they're in on everyone. You cannot be aggressive and not be a finalist for the top quarterback on the market.
Well, if that you could be in on everything but not a fan of a couple of people.
But isn't that something that couldn't be contradicted? Like, the team wants to get that out there, that they're in on players.
Yes, which, again, I don't think is a bad thing. But in this case, he says, if the quarterback has been perceived available, they've picked up the phone, they haven't ruled out Cam. And then he lists all the other trade guys, Watson, Wilson, Carr, Jimmy G, Mariota, Sam Darnold, Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater, Gardner Minshew, Nick Foles, hinting that basically they're in on all those guys. Should even if that's coming from the team, I feel good about that, that they could be aggressive with one of these other guys. They didn't really like Stafford. They didn't really like Wentz. But if Carr or Jimmy G is there, they're in.
I thought
that's good reporting, if true.
Right, if true, absolutely. And I don't blame him for writing it. If he's getting that information, he has to write it.
Right. I mean, that's the best Patriots story of the week.
No, I agree. And he does a good job. Like, I don't dislike Jeff Howe.
Oh, you hate Howe.
The fact of the matter is that at what point as Patriots fans did we enjoy when Bill Belichick told the world his offseason plans?
Yeah, but I mean, this is not Belichick, so they do it carefully.
So then that means there's some issue there, right?
There's some issues, but clearly there are issues. They should acknowledge that there's fan unrest. The fans are nervous. Maybe they haven't bailed. You've portrayed it as like they're going to be rioting on the street. That's not happening.
Rioting in the streets.
You basically said they bring Cam back. There will be rioting.
There will be booing at Gillette Stadium is what I said.
Okay, well, that's different from what you said.
But this is the thing that is an issue. Bill Belichick has been praised for over 20 years for doing it the way he's done it, which is behind closed doors. You never know what the plan is going to be.
Yeah, but there's times have changed.
So you think Bill Belichick should change how he approaches free agency?
Yes, I said he should have spoken Super Bowl week. Absolutely. He needs to change.
Do you think he has?
He has not.
And so this is going to be an issue.
Unless you believe this is it. He's leaking out. This is the best he can do is say, okay, let's go with this. Go ahead, put out the video. Put out the hype video.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say Bill has done it right for 20 years by not using the press to get things accomplished in free agency by not disclosing what his plans are. And then all of a sudden, the team is telling Jeff Howe who they're in on and who they're out on and say that that's a good thing as well.
Well, now you've pissed off Jeff Howe fans, including Rob from Bridgewater, who's on the line. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Good.
Good. Hey, I'm not so much a Jeff Howe fan, but Curtis, you always make me laugh. You say, a grown man taking information from the Patriots, all he wants to do is talk about him. You're a grown man for the last 6 months who has talked about nothing but Tom Brady. You got to get a new topic.
Great point, Rob.
Rob, Tom Brady.
One trick pony, Curtis.
Tom Brady is a national hero, and he has never failed me. He's got his 7th Super Bowl ring at 43, whereas
he is amazing.
Right. I love the man.
There's no debate he's amazing. But, dude, you got to get a new topic.
Okay.
It's getting old every day.
Rob, every Brady story, go to theglobe.com, ask anybody who covers media. Brady is the number one driver for clicks and listeners still in the city of Boston.
Without a doubt, he draws attention. There's no doubt. But I'm just telling you, I would be a P1 listener. It just gets tiring, man. You got to come up with a new trick.
I tell him this every morning, Rob. He's not listening. It's great, great point. Great call by you. I will say this. I would like you now, because here's my question for the fans coming up. What is a successful Patriots offseason? I want to know what that is. What does it look like to you? Do they need a quarterback? Do they not need a quarterback? It's open-ended. You tell me what it is. And I want to ask you right now, before we get to the calls, be positive. Somewhat take away your hatred of Belichick for letting Brady go. Put Brady aside for a moment. You tell me honestly, will you give the Patriots an A letter grade, an approvals if they do X? What does Bill need to do?
He needs to find the next guy, whether it's drafting or trading. And if it's, you know, if the prices remain.
And by that, you mean a quarterback. Like, it's all about the quarterback. The rest of the team doesn't matter.
There is nothing more important in any sport than the quarterback.
See, yeah, but see, I think, Tim, you want my answer? I'll cut you off.
Go ahead.
Because this contradicts what you're saying. If they can get Jimmy Garoppolo, if they can get Derek Carr, then that's a successful offseason.
Yes.
If they can't get those guys because they're not available, then the next best plan of attack is to get Cam Newton back and build the rest of the team up. And that should be viewed as a success.
I'm just curious as to why you think Cam is a better idea than Fitzpatrick.
I just think he's better than Fitzpatrick. He's been here a year. He knows the system. You give him no credit for the running ability and his attitude and his impact on the team's locker room and his interviews with us. He is a good thing for the Patriots. Fitzpatrick could come in here, be a gunslinger. I don't even get, like, that's not a fit. Do you really think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a fit with Bill?
I would rather watch Ryan Fitzpatrick play 16
games.
That's
not what I asked, though.
Is he better?
Is he a fit with Belichick's style?
Yeah, I don't think Cam was comfortable at all last season here.
I think, but Bill wants to run the ball. He wants to be the anti-league and grind out games, defense, and running. And Cam fits right into what they want to do. Fitzpatrick's going to come in and start chucking at the receivers they don't have. I mean, it's not a fit.
In my opinion, a success would either be to go to the bottom, go 2-14, and then, you know, rebuild that way.
Well, then you like Cam.
Right. I mean, but in my opinion, I think that Cam is not good. He's so bad.
I got news for you. He's the best free agent out there. He is the best free agent quarterback available, other than Dak Prescott, if he becomes available.
He's not better than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes, he is. Fitzpatrick's 38. He had 13 touchdowns and 8 picks, and he got benched for Tua.
If you look at their numbers, they played in almost the exact same amount of games and starts. So it's not like they're ones.
And you throw in the familiarity and a year in the system, it's not even close.
And who's been hit more and more injured, Cam or Fitzpatrick?
It's probably close. Fitzpatrick's taking a lot of hits.
Cam can't play football anymore.
Thank you, Rodney. For the love of God. No, but it will be. I will give them a successful grade if I see their planet quarterback coming to fruition.
Okay, that's the question for you. What is a successful Pats offseason? 617-779-7937. Also, discussing the week that was in Celtics basketball. Ainge, Stevens, and the whole bit. Hour 2, Ken and Curtis on the way.